Chapter 40. As if they were bent upon doing something very desperate, and were determined not to be put off, whatever happened. As a few minutes elapsed without anything occurring to explain this phenomenon, and as he felt his own position a peculiarly uncomfortable one, Nicholas was on the point of seeking some information from the man next him, when a sudden move was visible on the stairs, and a voice was heard to cry, "Now, gentlemen, have the goodness to walk up." So far from walking up, the gentleman on the stairs began to walk down with great alacrity, and to entreat, with extraordinary politeness, that the gentleman nearest the street would go first. The gentleman nearest the street retorted, with equal courtesy, that they couldn't think of such a thing on any account. But they did it, without thinking of it, inasmuch as the other gentleman pressing some half-dozen, among whom was Nicholas, forward, and closing up behind, pushed them, not merely up the stairs, but into the very sitting room of Mr. Gregsbury, which they were thus compelled to enter with most unseemly precipitation, and without the means of retreat, the press behind them, more than filling the apartment. "Gentlemen," said Mr. Gregsbury, "you are welcome. I am rejoiced to see you." For a gentleman who was rejoiced to see a body of visitors, Mr. Gregsbury looked as uncomfortable as might be. But perhaps this was occasioned by senatorial gravity and a statesmanlike habit of keeping his feelings under control. He was a tough, burly, thick-headed gentleman, with a loud voice, a pompous manner, a tolerable command of sentences with no meaning in them, and, in short, every requisite for a very good member indeed. "Now, gentlemen," said Mr. Gregsbury, tossing a great bundle of papers into a wicker basket at his feet, and throwing himself back in his chair with his arms over the elbows, "you are dissatisfied with my conduct, I see by the newspapers." "Yes, Mr. Gregsbury, we are," said a plump old gentleman in a violent heat, bursting out of the throng, and planting himself in the front. "Do my eyes deceive me," said Mr. Gregsbury, looking towards the speaker, "or is that my old friend Puck Styles?" "I am that man, and no other, sir," replied the plump old gentleman. "Give me your hand, my worthy friend," said Mr. Gregsbury. "Puck Styles, my dear friend, I am very sorry to see you here." "I am very sorry to be here, sir," said Mr. Puck Styles. "But your conduct, Mr. Gregsbury, has rendered this deputation from your constituents imperatively necessary." "My conduct, Puck Styles," said Mr. Gregsbury, looking round upon the deputation with gracious magnanimity, "my conduct has been, and ever will be, regulated by a sincere regard for the true and real interests of this great and happy country. Whether I look at home or abroad, whether I behold the peaceful industrious communities of our island home, her rivers covered with steamboats, her roads with locomotives, her streets with cabs, her skies with balloons of a power and magnitude hitherto unknown in the history of aeronautics in this, or any other nation, I say, whether I look merely at home, or, stretching my eyes farther, contemplate the boundless prospect of conquest and possession achieved by British perseverance, and British valor which is outspread before me, I clasp my hands, and turning my eyes to the broad expanse above my head, exclaim, thank heaven, I am a Briton." The time had been when this burst of enthusiasm would have been cheered to the very echo, but now, the deputation received it with chilling coldness. The general impression seemed to be that as an explanation of Mr. Gregsbury's political conduct, it did not enter quite enough into detail, and one gentleman in the rear did not scruple to remark aloud that, for his purpose, it savored rather too much of a gammon tendency. "The meaning of that term gammon," said Mr. Gregsbury, "is unknown to me. if it means that I grow a little too fervid, or perhaps even hyperbolical, in extolling my native land, I admit the full justice of the remark. I am proud of this free and happy country. My form dilates, my eye glistens, my breast heaves, my heart swells, my bosom burns, when I call to mind her greatness and her glory. Apostrophe, we wish, sir, apostrophe remark Mr. Puck Styles, calmly, to ask you a few questions. Apostrophe, if you please, gentlemen. My time is yours and my country's apostrophe said Mr. Gregsbury. This permission being conceded, Mr. Puck Styles put on his spectacles, and referred to a written paper which he drew from his pocket, whereupon nearly every other member of the deputation pulled a written paper from his pocket to check Mr. Puck Styles off as he read the questions. This done, Mr. Puck Styles proceeded to business. Question number one. Whether, sir, you did not give a voluntary pledge previous to your election, that in event of your being returned, you would immediately put down the practice of coughing and groaning in the House of Commons, and whether you did not submit to be coughed and groaned down in the very first debate of the session, and have since made no effort to effect a reform in this respect? Whether you did not also pledge yourself to astonish the government and make them shrink in their shoes? And whether you have astonished them and made them shrink in their shoes or not? Apostrophe, apostrophe, go on to the next one, my dear Puck Styles, apostrophe said Mr. Gregsbury. Have you any explanation to offer with reference to that question, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe asked Mr. Puck Styles. Certainly not, apostrophe said Mr. Gregsbury. The members of the deputation looked fiercely at each other, and afterwards at the member. Dear Puck Styles, having taken a very long stare at Mr. Gregsbury over the tops of his spectacles, resumed his list of inquiries. Question number two. Whether, sir, you did not likewise give a voluntary pledge that you would support your colleague on every occasion, and whether you did not, the night before last, desert him and vote upon the other side, because the wife of a leader on that other side had invited Mrs. Gregsbury to an evening party? Apostrophe, apostrophe, go on, apostrophe said Mr. Gregsbury. Nothing to say on that either, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe asked the spokesman. Nothing whatever, apostrophe replied Mr. Gregsbury. The deputation, who had only seen him at canvassing or election time, were struck dumb by his coolness. He didn't appear like the same man. Then he was all milk and honey. Now he was all starch and vinegar. But men are so different at different times. Question number three and last, apostrophe said Mr. Puck Styles, emphatically. Whether, sir, you did not state upon the hustings that it was your firm and determined intention to oppose everything proposed, to divide the House upon every question, to move for returns on every subject, to place a motion on the books every day, and, in short, in your own memorable words, to play the very devil with everything and everybody? Apostrophe, apostrophe. With this comprehensive inquiry, Mr. Puck Styles folded up his list of questions, as did all his backers. Mr. Gregsbury reflected, blew his nose, threw himself further back in his chair, came forward again, leaning his elbows on the table, made a triangle with his two thumbs and his two forefingers, and tapping his nose with the apex thereof, replied, smiling as he said it, I deny everything. Apostrophe, at this unexpected answer, a hoarse murmur arose from the deputation, and the same gentleman who had expressed an opinion relative to the gammoning nature of the introductory speech, again made a monosyllabic demonstration, by growling out resign. Apostrophe, apostrophe, which growl being taken up by his fellows, swelled into a very earnest and general remonstrance. I am requested, sir, to express a hope, apostrophe said Mr. Puck Styles, with a distant bow, that on receiving a requisition to that effect from a great majority of your constituents, you will not object at once to resign your seat in favor of some candidate whom they think they can better trust. Apostrophe, to this, Mr. Gregsbury read the following reply, which, anticipating the request, he had composed in the form of a letter, whereof copies had been made to send round to the newspapers. My dear Mr. Pugstyles, next to the welfare of our beloved island, this great and free and happy country, whose powers and resources are, I sincerely believe, illimitable, I value that noble independence which is an Englishman's proudest boast, and which I fondly hope to bequeath to my children, untarnished and unsullied. Actuated by no personal motives, but moved only by high and great constitutional considerations, which I will not attempt to explain, for they are really beneath the comprehension of those who have not made themselves masters, as I have, of the intricate and arduous study of politics, I would rather keep my seat, and in doing so, will you do me the favor to present my compliments to the constituent body, and acquaint them with this circumstance? With great esteem, my dear Mr. Pugstyles, &c&c apostrophe, then you will not resign, under any circumstances? Apostrophe apostrophe asked the spokesman. Mr. Gregsbury smiled, and shook his head. Then, good morning, sir, apostrophe said Pugstyles, angrily. Heaven bless you, apostrophe apostrophe said Mr. Gregsbury. And the deputation, with many growls and scowls, filed off as quickly as the narrowness of the staircase would allow of their getting down. The last man being gone, Mr. Gregsbury rubbed his hands and chuckled, as merry fellows will, when they think they have said or done a more than commonly good thing. He was so engrossed in this self-congratulation that he did not observe that Nicholas had been left behind in the shadow of the window curtains, until that young gentleman, fearing he might otherwise overhear some soliloquy intended to have no listeners, coughed twice or thrice, to attract the member's notice. What's that? Apostrophe apostrophe said Mr. Gregsbury, in sharp accents. Nicholas stepped forward, and bowed. What do you do here, sir? Apostrophe apostrophe asked Mr. Gregsbury. A spy upon my privacy. A concealed voter. You have heard my answer, sir. Pray follow the deputation. Apostrophe, I should have done so, if I had belonged to it, but I do not, apostrophe said Nicholas. Then how came you here, sir? Apostrophe apostrophe was the natural inquiry of Mr. Gregsbury, M.P. And where the devil have you come from, sir? Apostrophe was the question which followed it. I brought this card from the General Agency office, sir, apostrophe said Nicholas, wishing to offer myself as your secretary, and understanding that you stood in need of one. Apostrophe, that's all you have come for, is it? Apostrophe, apostrophe said Mr. Gregsbury, eyeing him in some doubt. Nicholas replied in the affirmative. You have no connection with any of those rascally papers, have you? Apostrophe apostrophe said Mr. Gregsbury. You didn't get into the room to hear what was going forward and put it in print, eh? Apostrophe apostrophe, I have no connection, I am sorry to say, with anything at present, apostrophe rejoined Nicholas, politely enough, but quite at his ease. Oh! Apostrophe apostrophe said Mr. Gregsbury. How did you find your way up here, then? Apostrophe, Nicholas related how he had been forced up by the deputation. That was the way, was it? Apostrophe, apostrophe said Mr. Gregsbury. Sit down. Apostrophe, Nicholas took a chair, and Mr. Gregsbury stared at him for a long time, as if to make certain, before he asked any further questions, that there were no objections to his outward appearance. You want to be my secretary, do you? Apostrophe apostrophe he said at length. I wish to be employed in that capacity, sir, apostrophe replied Nicholas. Well, apostrophe said Mr. Gregsbury, now what can you do? Apostrophe, I suppose, apostrophe replied Nicholas, smiling, that I can do what usually falls to the lot of other secretaries. Apostrophe, what's that? " inquired Mr. Gregsbury. "What is it?" " replied Nicholas. "Ah, what is it?" " retorted the member, looking shrewdly at him, with his head on one side. "A secretary's duties are rather difficult to define, perhaps," said Nicholas, "considering. They include, I presume, correspondence?" " interposed Mr. Gregsbury. "The arrangement of papers and documents?" " very good. " occasionally, perhaps, the writing from your dictation, and possibly, sir," " said Nicholas, with a half-smile, "the copying of your speech for some public journal, when you have made one of more than usual importance." " certainly, rejoined Mr. Gregsbury. "What else?" " really, said Nicholas, after a moment's reflection, "I am not able, at this instant, to recapitulate any other duty of a secretary, beyond the general one of making himself as agreeable and useful to his employer as he can, consistently with his own respectability, and without overstepping that line of duties which he undertakes to perform, and which the designation of his office is usually understood to imply." Mr. Gregsbury looked fixedly at Nicholas for a short time, and then glancing warily round the room, said in a suppressed voice, "This is all very well, Mr. What is your name?" Nickleby. This is all very well, Mr. Nickleby, and very proper, so far as it goes, but it doesn't go far enough. There are other duties, Mr. Nickleby, which a secretary to a parliamentary gentleman must never lose sight of. I should require to be crammed, sir. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.